Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
We are in a position now where it's not necessarily about development at the big league level. It's about winning ball games at the big league level. We do have, as you have noted, some injured players will be returning at some point that, you know, we will have to make the decision about how they fit in versus some of the younger players. And essentially on any given night, it's up to Tony to take the roster that he has and put him in the best position to win.
That is White Sox GM Rick Hahn. His the roster he gave Tony La Russa, and the manager has scribbled together lineups that have the largest lead in the AL. There's six games over Cleveland. Welcome in, welcome back. Chicago Sports Radio 670. The Score, Steve Rosenblum and Mark Rohde with you. Score's Hotline is presented by Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas, home of the world's largest sports book. Joining the show now is Odyssey MLB insider Bob Nightingale. Insider calls are presented by BetQL. Get access to data and insights the sportsbooks don't want you to see. Bet smarter and beat the books. Download the BetQL app or visit BetQL.com today. Bob, thanks for joining us today. How are you?
Yeah, doing great. How about you guys?
We're doing good. My first question is, what are in any order you want to put them, what are Chris Bryant, Javi Baez, Disco Tony Rizzo, Wilson Contreras, and Craig Kimbrell worth on in the trade market?
Well, I think Kimbrell might have the most value, but there's a club option on him next year. I think it was $16 million. Mm-hmm. So where Chris Bryant will be a rental player. I don't believe for a second that Anthony Rizzo is going anywhere. And he's staying right there. They'll eventually re-sign him. Baez, we'll see. And Trevor Story's out there too. So, we'll see how much a team's willing to give Baez, where Story's a little bit more more consistent player. But I would go Kimbrell 1, Bryant 2 as far as value.
Have talks reopened with the Mets and Chris Bryant?
That's what I'm aware of. I don't think he's been out there yet as far as a shopped around, after the All-Star game, in the draft. They could be a different story. The Mets need a third baseman, so obviously they'd be interested. They can pick up the money. They don't care about that. And, the beauty about Bryant, of course, is he can play the outfield or first base, and, they have a need for outfielders too.
Our guest is Bob Nightingale. He's the Odyssey MLB insider. He's joining us here on the Score, Steve Rosenblum, Mark Rohde, and we're talking Chicago baseball. So the Cubs were, they seemed caught. They played a tough schedule, but they were one of the three teams. In June, they were one of three NL teams that were above 500 against teams. They had a winning record against teams 500 or better. The Brewers were the other team and the Giants. And then now people are talking about a tough stretch, but they were beating those teams. What do you imagine Jed Hoyer knows about his team or thinks about his team, or what conclusions has he arrived at? Not that he has to make a deal now, although they have jumped out early in previous years, but what do you think he knows for sure about his team that will dictate the next move or two?
Well, I think it was a situation where that maybe he thought realistically they were playing over their heads. Let me see if this can keep continuing. We don't really have the pitching. We don't have that, true ace sort of thing. And now that this has happened, pretty much just over the last, week, now it's almost like a reality is setting in. Certainly, if you're 7.5 games back, it makes your decision much, much easier. And I think, you know, they want it clearly one way or the other. Either you win the race or not. You know, it'd be different if it was the rules were like a year ago, where, you know, eight teams from each league were making the playoffs, but this year it's just five. And the way the Brewers are playing, you know, now you start to wonder whether anybody can catch them. So I think in some ways it certainly makes the job easier as far as trying to decide what to do.
Hey, Bob, in 2021, can teams still get other clubs' top prospects? Like, if the Cubs were to trade one of the big four or five, as Steve was, you know, asked in the first question, what is the top value the Cubs could get?
Yeah, not that much. You're absolutely right. I mean, teams just don't do that anymore. I mean, you saw what, you know, Pittsburgh did when they traded for Chris Archer, set that franchise back 6 or 7 years. When you're, you know, trading away an Austin Meadows and Glasnow and another top prospect. And remember now, you're just only talking about rental players. That's why I said, yeah, Kimbrel will have more value. I mean, Bryant, you know, he's going to test the free agent market. So, you know, all you got him for is 2 months and he's gone. You know, you don't get a draft pick for him or anything else. And he's making good money too. So there's not many teams that are going to take on his contract. He's making $19 million. So, you know, divide that roughly by a half. And, you know, not many teams are going to say, you know what, we want to pay $8 million over 2 months and he could be gone. It's just not worth it.
Our guest is Bob Nightingale, Odyssey MLB insider. We're talking Chicago baseball and the Score. So the White Sox, everybody says they need a second baseman because Nick Madrigal's out. And all they do is keep finding guys to fill in. No matter who gets injured, they keep bringing up guys. It is a spectacular performance organizationally from the top down, that the idea, the plan, the development, the time to bring them up, whether it was forced or otherwise, the way the manager's using them, the way that, however it has happened, it has been productive. Whoever they have brought up, it has worked. So the discussion about Eduardo Escobar would be a cheaper player, he'd be a rental. Adam Frazier not. You'd still have Nick Madrigal unless he's in the trade going the other way. What do you think the White Sox need, or what do you think they know they need or what they don't need? I'm trying to figure out what's the public discussion because we're on the outside looking in, or in the White Sox, maybe they say privately, we're more confident. Our system shows it's working. We're going to find a way, and we're getting our good players back. Which is truer?
I think they want to go for the jugular here as far as, yeah, could they win the division, stay in pat? They could, you know, with Danny Medwick staying at second base. You know, you're going to have, I mean, you know, for the rest of the season until Madrigal's back. You know, Escobar is just a fill-in. You know, I mean, that trade was about to go down, and then he got hurt. I mean, he's still not running well. You know, White Sox know this. But, yeah, you just cost a fringe guy and help you offensively, and certainly a big boost in the clubhouse. You know, not that they need that boost, but he's a full of energy in the Diamondbacks clubhouse leader. Frazier is a better player, but it's going to cost a lot more, too. You know, you can get that guy cheap. The asking price would be much higher. And I think, you know, with the six-game lead they have now, they can sit around and say, you know what, let's pick and choose here. If we're just going to have spend money for one guy, who do we want? So, you know, that they have the luxury to be patient now, whereas maybe, you know, 10 days ago, when they were going through the losing streak, things start to turn, you know, a little panic start to set in.
What would the price be for Adam Frazier, and which other teams might the White Sox be competing for his services?
Well, I think for him, you're probably talking about one of your top five prospects. Yeah, the Mets need a third baseman, too. You know, not too many teams would be in the running for him. You know, maybe, you know, the Yankees. Yankees could use some midfield help, but, you know, the Yankees may be out of it as it is. So, yeah, not, you know, only a few teams would have the interest. You know, we'll see. But the asking price for him would be much higher than an Escobar. It would just cost a fringe guy.
Who do you think will be the biggest name starting pitcher to be traded?
I don't think there's a great guy out there. You know, maybe a Berrios from the Minnesota Twins. You know, he's okay. John Gray from the Rockies. I don't, you know, if Germán Márquez of the Rockies is available, I'd say him. If he's got 3 years of control, I just don't see the Rockies moving him. If you do, it's going to, you know, cost a lot. And, you know, when you're the White Sox decision, too, it's like you spent all these years, you know, grabbing these top prospects and all that. The mm-hmm. last thing you want to do is just go for it and give away the farm. And then, you know, where are you next year if things turn south? So, you know, they can afford to be, you know, they can afford to just hang on to their guys and say, you know what, we want a nice run here. We don't want to be a one year and out.
Well, I know what you're saying, but the Sox have a surplus, and this is the year, man. Like, they may not be in position to have another chance this good at winning a World Series. So, I don't know, Bob. I would, if I were the Sox, I would consider making a bold move. You know what I mean? Like, you don't have to give up everything, but they have a surplus.
Yeah, no, you're right, and they could make a big move, a ball move, you know, bigger than, you know, any ones we're talking about. I mean, obviously Escobar is not a ball move; it's just a minor thing. But a, yeah, they could do that and say, you know what, we're looking around here. You know, are we better than the, you know, better than the Boston Red Sox or Tampa Bay Rays? Maybe. I mean, the week over there, you know, are they better than the Houston Astros or Oakland A's? That remains to be seen. But it's, you know, it's so wide open this year, really, in both leagues. You know, on paper, you know, maybe the Astros are the best team. But, you know, things change, and the Astros, you know, outside Greinke, you know, don't have those pitchers with the experience in the postseason.
Bob Nightingale is our guest here on The Score. We're talking baseball. He's the Odyssey MLB insider. While it's not in our town, I still can't not ask about your thoughts on Shohei Ohtani. This amazing thing where he has 77 home runs in his career and 149 strikeouts. That's second only to Babe Ruth, 714 and 501. And in a season in which he has pitched 10 games, any pitcher has pitched 10 games. Most home runs as a batter and 10 games pitched. 30 by Ohtani. In 1919, Babe Ruth hit 29. This is unbelievable. And they're only making it easier to hit baseballs now. Did you really expect this, Bob? What do you think of what's, and where do you think this goes?
You know, it's funny, when he first came over, remember, every team bid on the guy, and you know, the Angels won out, and people thought, they didn't think this kind of power. I think he thought maybe 20 home runs, and but then he was always hurt and everything else, and very erratic on the mound. And then, you know, but to put this all together is stunning. You know, I used to think that he'd eventually have to give up hitting and just become a great starter. Now I think it's the other way around. I mean, you know, it's funny. He's got 30 home runs now. They played 81 games. So he's on the same pace as Babe Ruth, hit 60 home runs, that sort of thing. But, you know, I think he'd be and this is a team with Mike Trout. I think he's a better outfielder than Mike Trout. He's got more speed than Mike Trout, you know, more power than Mike Trout. So it's phenomenal what he's done. You know, I think, you know, as Joe Maddon said the other day, when you're talking about, you know, great outfielders like Ken Griffey Jr. or Barry Bonds, you know, he goes, if this guy was playing the outfield every day, you put him in the same conversation. So I think it's going to be a freak show at the All-Star game. And there's going to be 62 guys there, but it's going to be a one-man show. You know, can they use those juiced-up balls in the home run derby, and they're playing at, you know, at Coors Field? I think it's going to hit some balls. Like I said, they're not real baseballs, but they said they're on the home run derby. I think they'll hit balls that are 550, 560 feet there.
Hey, that's totally cool. Juice them up, man, at the All-Star game. Why not? Is this going to, like, is this precedent setting, you think, in any way? Do you think there'll be more players, young players, who will try to develop similarly, or is this sort of novelty?
Well, there's been a few. You know, McKay kid out of Louisville that went to Tampa. He's a two-way player. Michael Lorenzen of Cincinnati, a two-way guy.
Yeah.
But just not to that thing. I mean, it takes some, you know, a starting pitcher needs 5 days to recover. And for this guy to come out of a start and then go immediately to the outfield or then DH for four straight days, that's the thing. I mean, nobody can believe that this guy can, you know, spend time, you know, pouring over pitching reports, pitching bullpen sessions, and taking batting practice without just being completely exhausted.
Bob, thanks for your time. We appreciate your insight. Thanks for joining us today on The Score.
Sure. Thanks, Jay. Thanks, Mark.
All right,
Bob.
That was Odyssey MLB Insider Bob Nightingale. Insider calls are presented by BetQL. BetQL is here to help us all make better bets through real, proven analytics. Bet smarter and beat the books. Download the BetQL app or visit BetQL.com today. We'll take a break. When we come back, we're going to do What Are You Doing, Wegner? And, Mark, it will include sort of a quiz of your knowledge of cinema.
Okay.
So,
I took a quiz yesterday on the Mully and Haw show with Haw, and I got like a C+, and it was Bears, so I'm really nervous about this. And two quizzes in 2 days. If I underperform again, this is going to be a horrible holiday for me.
Pop quizzes. Well, it'll make you feel better that UConn is now part of Saturday suckage in a way, similar to the way that Brian Cashman is. So we'll recap that. And after this break, Saturday suckage. We suck so you don't have to. Because we're pleasers, not teasers. That's what makes us great Americans on this 4th of July weekend.
Yeah.
Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
I don't know.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com. Chicago Sports Station.
Zidane. Whatcha?
Oh, what are you doing? He threw him out of the ballgame. You got to be paping me. What in the hell are you doing?
What are you doing, indeed? Welcome in, welcome back. Steve Rosenblum, Mark Grody, our near award-winning segment, What Are You Doing, Wegner? I want to let you know that later on this hour, we will bring you the Jake Berger interview that Inside the Clubhouse hosts Bruce Levine and David Haw did with the new White Sox star, just the best story going in baseball. And then after that, at 2 p.m. on Chicago Sports Radio 670, The Score, this here radio station, it's Down the Line with Cody Decker, presented by Circa Sportsbook Las Vegas. But in this version, this edition of What Are You Doing, Wegner, 28 years ago Thursday, Mark, the release of the movie A League of Their Own.
Okay.
That's when it came out. It became the biggest selling baseball movie, the number one selling baseball movie, the top grossing movie. And the obvious reason is it was a baseball movie when tickets cost more than they did when The Pride of the Yankees, for instance, was released. So A League of Their Own has accounted for grossed at $107,533.928. That was the biggest movie of all time. And number two is 42. And again, movies cost more. So that left us this classic line.
Are you crying?
No.
Are you crying? Are you crying? There's no crying. There's no crying in baseball!
There you go.
Until classic. Tom Hanks.
Yeah, until we get to the Jake Berger thing. So, that line, there's no crying in baseball, landed at number 54 on the list of the greatest movie quotes, 100 years and 100 movies, as compiled several years ago by the American Film Institute. Number 54, right behind Animal Crackers, Groucho Marx saying, "One morning I shot an elephant in my pajamas. How he got into my pajamas, I don't know." And one spot ahead of Diane Keaton's Annie Hall line, la-dee-da. So, can you name the top five movie lines of all time as determined by the American Film Institute? 100 years and 100 films. That's in 100 movie quotes.
Wow.
Yeah.
I'll start with, you switch the samples, right? And then I would say two is, unlock me. And then three is, you find this man.
You find this man.
Yeah. And then three is, you're damn right I ordered the code red.
Yeah.
But I guess those probably aren't in the top. I would say it's probably like Humphrey Bogart, right? Like all the, what is it? All the bars and gin stands in America.
You know, you have the right movie. That's, yeah.
Casablanca, is it?
Yeah. Theo Epstein's grandfather and great uncle. Yeah. Of all the gin joints in all the world, she's got to walk into mine. There were millions of lines in the great lines that the
Here's looking at you. Is that it? Yeah. Here's looking at you.
Exactly. That's number five. Here's looking at you, kid.
Okay.
And I always favor two others. One was, I'm shocked there's gambling going on in here, which is followed by, here are your winnings, Inspector Renault. Oh, thank you. Thank you very much.
Let's see. Let me try another one. Go ahead.
No. And the other one from Casablanca, that is the closing line, maybe the greatest closing line in any movie. This could be the beginning of a beautiful friendship,
which
followed Round Up the Usual Suspects, which also made the list. But that was number five, so that was good. You had Casablanca, you had the right movie. Here's looking at you, kid.
All right, I'm assuming there's some other classics in there, like, how about that one movie where the guy is outside of the house and he's yelling, Stella? Stella! Is that there?
That's on the list, but not in the top five. Streetcar Named Desire. That's
how about in Pulp Fiction when John Travolta says, I gotta know what a $5 shake tastes like?
No,
didn't make the list.
The closest you got was Goldfinger, a martini, shaken, not stirred.
Nice. Yeah. Nice. That's top five?
That's number 90. That's not there.
Number 90. Okay. Yeah, but that was close 90. On mine. This is a really difficult drill.
It is. So I couldn't do it either. And I would not have had number one, according to the American Film Institute, is and you know what? The Caneville gal who texted in, I wanted to look at this first. Caneville gal came up with, we're going to need a bigger boat. And that's on the list. That's you go, girl. Round Up the Usual Suspects, somebody else suggested. And the 773 suggested, I'll have what she's having.
That's got to be there.
And the 815 got it. Got the start of it, but not the line cited by AFI. 815 says, frankly, Scarlett. You know what follows that, Mark?
Oh, I don't give a damn, right?
Frankly, my dear, I don't give a damn. Yeah, that was number one.
How about from a 312, show me the money. That's got to be on the top 100.
Yes. And two lines from that. You had me at hello.
Oh, yeah.
Jerry Maguire.
Yes.
Number two. Yes. Mm-hmm. Number two is, I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
Oh, of course.
Yeah. According to AFI again. So number three, you don't understand. I could have had class. I could have been a contender.
Yeah.
I could have been somebody instead of a bum, which is what I am. Again, Marlon Brando, but in a whole different world, Marlon Brando on the waterfront. That's what that's from. Not I'm going to make an offer he can't refuse. Marlon Brando, two of the top three movie lines. Number
four. How about Dumb and Dumber? How's your burger?
Your Jake burger?
Yeah, exactly. I thought it was fitting.
The number four line, according to AFI, Toto, I have a feeling we're not in Kansas anymore.
Yeah, classic.
And you had number five, here's looking at you, kid. So let me ask you about this, because number six, according to AFI, is Go Ahead, Make My Day.
Mm-hmm. Okay, Clint Eastwood.
Now, I think it's not as good as what they've listed at number 51, which is you've got to ask yourself one question. Do I feel lucky? Well, do you, Punk?
Yeah.
I think that's better. I have that higher.
Yeah, I probably would, too. I would, too. How about in a Few Good Men when the Jack Nicholson character says, yeah, but you got to ask nicely. You got to ask nicely.
Well, let me see if it's here. I don't know. I haven't memorized this as an odd way.
There's got to be some Few Good Men lines in there, I would imagine. Like that whole court scene is just deluxe, Gonzo.
Let me see, because I'm not...
You're damn right I ordered the Code Red. I'd be very surprised. You just weakened the country today, soldier.
You can't handle the truth.
You can't handle the truth.
Number 29.
Right.
And the one above it is Play It Again, Sam. Play.
How about...
As time goes by.
How about in The Shining? Here's Johnny!
That's a really good... Yo, Adrian.
I'm not going to hurt you. I'm just going to bash your freaking brains in. There's that
number
one,
68. Right
Which
above.
Which one?
They're here.
Oh, Poltergeist, yeah.
Yeah, here's Johnny. And of all the gin joints in all the world, is number 67 right above it.
That's fun. I like this list. This is good.
Yeah, it's quite the... And the movie lines are worth arguing over. You can do that. Some movies I hadn't seen. That's why I didn't get the top five list, and I never would have gotten, like, number 17 is Rosebud, which is one word, one line, and it's the mystery around which Citizen Kane revolves. It comes back to it, and you get the whole thing. I don't know. I didn't think there was a that great of a line, but it was a really good story.
Great text one says, Taxi Driver, you talking to me from the 630. Yeah. That's got to be in the top 20.
Oh, yeah. It's on there. It's on there.
Yeah. I did not hit her. It's not true. It's I did not hit her. I did not. Oh, hi, Mark.
Is that one in there?
Oh, hi, Mark is not there. No.
Oh, hi, Mark.
No. It's not. It's not there. Number 21. A census taker once tried to test me. I ate his liver with some fava beans and a nice Chianti.
Now we're talking.
Yeah. So
sounds like lambs. You don't know.
And they are the lines are indeed they're terrific. Hasta la vista, baby, at number 76. But here's because it recurred and recurred and recurred that it. Is really a good line, and we've used it before. Stryker, surely you can't be serious. And the response is great too, right?
Yeah. I am, and don't call me Shirley.
All right. And number 82 is Toga, Toga.
Oh, yeah. Animal House.
And we had it brought up earlier, you're going to need a bigger boat. That was number 35.
How about any of the from Airplane, any of the pilot to Johnny question? You ever seen a grown man naked? You ever you like to hang out in the locker room after the big game?
Well, they don't always limit it to one line, but it should be that, because right in the they say great movie lines, and number three has a whole bunch of lines of Marlon Brando could have been a contender, but I thought the best one was Kareem Abdul-Jabbar pulling the little kid. You tell your dad to drag Lanier and Walton up the court for 48 minutes.
Right. That was great.
So in another movie-related anniversary.
Excuse me.
Because I'm tight.
That's all right. We don't have the same. Oh.
Yeah. There we go.
My cough button is not working. I'm sorry.
No, it is not. Neither is your sneeze button. All right, no. Mike Rankin. I asked Mike Rankin this question. Maybe he knows. 116 years ago Wednesday, Moonlight Graham got his game. Who's Moonlight Graham, Mike Rankin?
See, you're going to put me in front of everyone, Steve. You're going to do this to me?
I told you I would.
I don't know. I don't know the answer.
Mark?
Wait, what's the question?
Moonlight Graham got his game in 1905. That was 116 years ago Wednesday.
It's the baseball movie. With Darth Vader and all.
exactly right. Field of Dreams.
Thank you.
Oh, wow. Well, yeah, they're doing that thing, right? In the, you know, in August or something, the White Sox and all that.
Yeah, Field of Dreams and Darth Vader. That's, yeah.
Yeah, Rankin, was, the White Sox like, fan yeah, you right, are. Right. You should have been a little bit more familiar, sir.
But it was this Wednesday. Moonlight Graham got his game. He showed up and didn't get to bat, and that was it. And then Burt Lancaster became a doctor to save the choking little girl. And it was that was the anniversary.
And then they started playing catch with right on the field with the father, right?
Nice, Mike.
They have a catch.
Yeah, that's
they have a catch, which is the East Coast. It's just an East Coast thing, and it's so horrible.
Yeah, that is stupid.
Right. You're supposed to say that like Beavis or Butthead, right?
It's stupid. The East Coast is stupid.
Stupid. Oh, there yeah, you yeah. go. So that's it. When Mike asked who Moonlight Graham was and didn't know where it came from, I thought, oh, my God, this really does suck. This is really...
Do you see the top?
This is really the chasm in the cultural zeitgeist of our producer. It's like, and it's not even an old thing. It's just not.
Yeah.
It's just, that's a classic movie.
Yeah, I would think that Mike would have known just because of his White Sox-ness, like just because of the Field of Dreams thing. Like that's, yeah, you got, hey, yeah. if you're going to be the White Sox guy, you
yeah,
got
to know
the
I'll
history.
Take responsibility for that. But, you know, we have Cody Decker down the line with Cody Decker coming up, and he makes a really good point about how bad that movie is. So maybe one of these days if we could talk to him, he could give you his opinion on Field of Dreams, and I will default to him as that, like, that's my opinion now, right? Like, I'm kind of familiar with the movie, not enough to know what you guys are talking about, but whatever he says about it, I'm on board, just based on this conversation.
I don't need to hear his bad take. I know whether I like a movie or not, and I cry at that movie.
That's an irresponsible take.
I'm a father who played catch with his son.
Well, my father and I played plenty of ball. Plenty of catch. We had plenty of catches, right? But
yeah, we haven't seen plenty of movies, apparently.
That's true. That is true.
I do like the person who, from the 815, who says, get these mother bleeping snakes off this mother bleeping plane.
Yeah. Nice so anyways, job, one last part of Wegner before we get set to replay the Jake Berger interview. We have another member of the Saturday Suckage Club. The Athletic had reported that Gino Auriemma is now navigating the name, image, likeness issues with his players, right? The NCAA's new, they have changed. So yes. he has a UConn star who's going to capitalize. And he asked Paige Buchers, you know what makes this go away? She goes, yeah, if I suck. I said, correct. So we have new, joining Brian Cashman today.
I also know that we suck right now, as bad as you can be.
That's it. Brian Cashman, and Gino Auriemma, and his new star. Yeah, if I suck. I said, correct. So that's good. We're gaining momentum. We're gaining steam.
You know what we're doing? We're gaining momentum into our five-hour show, which will not be tomorrow, but the next day.
Right. We will take a break, and we'll come back and talk about Monday's Suckathon. He's Mark Rohde. I'm Steve Rosenblum. We suck so you don't have to. Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
All right. Well, see you later.
Number 98, Mark. Nobody puts baby in the corner.
There you go.
98 on AFI list. And yes, Texter, I'm sorry, that the I amuse you how? I'm funny how? That is not on the list. Sorry.
That's a little surprising.
The American Film Institute list of 100 great movie quotes. But yeah, but it gives you something to talk about, something to argue about. We will, Mark, we're doing a suckathon on Monday, 7 a.m. Be there.
7 a.m. 5-hour show. So be ready.
Yeah, be ready. We'll have Trash Panda back from officiating a wedding. Oh, my God. Trash Panda's marrying two people. Oh, my God. And I have a I have something from you and David Haw talking about country music that I think will be uproarious and merriment and hijinks to follow and all kinds of stuff that was spawned by one of the most famous sports teams ever. So we'll do that, and we'll talk about why the Cubs suck and why the White Sox don't. And the 630 texter, you guys are national treasures. Thank you for keeping us entertained over the holiday weekend. Look, we suck so you don't have to. It's our, right? Mark,
yeah.
We're pleasers, not teasers.
Exactly. And Steve, will you be watching any firecracker shows tonight? Will you be partaking in any gluttony this weekend? Or is this the highlight of your weekend right here, what just happened?
This working with you is always the highlight. Although
I would expect so, yeah.
Yes, that is it. And looking forward to Monday and staying safe from people who want to throw fireworks at you and put a hole in your head. I'm not going to be JPP. I'm not doing that. So we will beg off this, and we will leave you with a Jake Berger interview done with Inside the Clubhouse hosts Bruce Levine and David Haw. After that will be Cody Decker. It's Down the Line with Cody Decker, presented by Circa Sportsbook Las Vegas, and we'll be back on Monday, 7 a.m., part of the holiday suckathon. We thank you for listening. Thank Mike Rankin for not knowing anything. And here's the inside. I mean, he didn't know Moonlight Grant.
I know. He had one opportunity and he blew it, you know?
I'm sad.
Thanks, guys.
He's just trying to.
He's going to make you feel good going into your weekend, Mike.
He's trying to outsuck Trash Panda, but I don't think that's possible. So he wants the gig. Wow. All right. Thanks, everybody, for listening, for texting, for being wrong about what movie lines. Oh, 608 texture, you're right. I'm walking here. That is on the list. Ratso Rizzo and Midnight Cowboy. I'm walking here. Ratso Rizzo and Midnight Cowboy. And so the American treasures known as Steve Rosenblum and Mark Rohde will be leaving you now. Thanks for listening. Bye.
It wouldn't have been possible if we weren't here to be told how much we suck. So kudos to you guys for sucking as bad as we do.
Oh, yes. Wait a minute, Mr. Postman.
Wait.
Oh, yeah.
That's it.
Obviously, I played with him in 2017. We did everything together because we roomed together. We went to low A together, flew together everywhere. And, you know, to see him go through what he went through from 2017 to now is it's pretty spectacular to see where he is right now, because he's been through a lot. And, you know, tons of up and downs, more downs than up. But, you know, this season to see him start out and, you know, in the beginning of the season, it started as like it's good to be back. It's fun to be playing baseball. And then you kind of saw that shift in the season where it was like, man, you know, I can do this. I can be a big leaguer again.
Welcome back inside the clubhouse, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. I'm David Haw with Bruce Levine until 11 o'clock. That was the voice of Gavin Sheets talking fondly about his teammate Jake Berger, who he has come up through the White Sox system with, and who wasn't happy for Jake Berger last, watching him come through, get his first major league hit, hear the emotion in his voice post-game. And let's go out to the guest hotline, sponsored by Circa Resort Casino in Las Vegas, home of the world's largest sports book. And that is where we find the man of the moment, Jake Berger. Good morning and congratulations, Jake.
Good morning. Thank you so much. Thanks for having me.
How'd you sleep last night?
I slept like a baby, you know. The night before, I couldn't get any sleep, and then finally came off the adrenaline high a little bit and went to bed.
Jake, we'll talk about your first hits and we'll talk about your first experience, but I want to know that feeling, that sensation, that thought process when you first stepped into the batter's box for your first at bat. What's going through your mind? How do you block out all the emotion and get through that at bat and do what you end up doing?
Honestly, it was just breathe. You know, Steve Finley, I talk with him a lot, and he's like, make sure you take like as many deep breaths as you can. That's what everybody else is telling me. So that's kind of how I got outside of the emotions and just play baseball. But, you know, you step into the box and there's nothing like it. I mean, legs are jello and, you know, you can't really feel your body. And so I definitely wanted to take a pitch just to, like, feel the moment for a sec. And so, yeah, I mean, there's nothing like it. There's nothing like that feeling.
So, Jake, when you
when you have the success that you had last night and everybody kind of starts to learn more about your story, people are amazed that it's hard enough to come back from one major injury in an athlete's career, but you did it twice. You did it twice, and to have two Achilles injuries to the extent that they were, you know, set you back. And how would you describe how the journey was, and what was the most difficult part to overcome?
It's tough. It's a struggle, and mentally, I think it's harder than the physical side of it. Constantly not sure if you're ever going to play baseball again. Not sure if you're ever going to step on a field again. And so, I think that's probably the hardest part, seeing all your friends have success and you're really happy for them, but you just don't know if you're going to get back to playing with them. So that's definitely the hardest part. And it was a long journey, but I'm happy I went through it.
You mentioned, and by the way, Jason Benetti, the great Sox broadcaster, asked you some really good questions in the post game, and you mentioned the support you got from your parents and how they were there for you and how they said don't give up and taught you that. How much of that, you know, having breakfast with them and the rest of the family today, were you appreciative of where you come from and who you are?
No, I give everything to my parents. They helped me get through those tough times. If it wasn't for them, I probably would have quit. I got to give everything to them and for constantly believing in me and constantly just supporting me and seeing my talent for what it is. So, you lose sight of that when you're hurt. So just like having that whole moment with them was really special.
So, who was there last night, and how far of a trip did they have to make, and how much of a scramble was it to get the right tickets? And there's that other element besides just focusing on the fact, okay, I'm playing third base tonight, but I would imagine that those are some pleasant distractions to have to deal with.
Yeah, no, it was good. My mom, dad, and sister came, so just my direct family, and I think it's like an 8-hour drive from St. Louis, so not too bad, and I got the tickets for them, and I still know, like, they're excited for tonight even, you know. It's just like they saw what I went through firsthand, and so it's cool to share that with them.
When you got the word in the minor leagues that they were going to start playing you at second base, how excited did you get? How nervous did you get knowing that you're a third baseman? They're thinking, well, we have a need at second base. We're thinking about watching him see how he does there. And what was that transition like? I mean, how difficult was all that to mentally absorb and then physically go do?
It wasn't too hard because it's an infield spot. I think if you go out to the outfield, it's a little different. But you get a little more time at second base, and I don't know. It's just it was cool that, you know, they're trying to work me out at different positions. You know, that's always a good sign. So that made me feel pretty good.
How were you with your back to the first baseman making that pivot? How hard was that?
Yeah, that's a little different. You're used to your momentum going towards first base at third, and at second is a little different. So just kind of feeling that out, definitely. So it's interesting for sure.
Talking with Jake Berger, the White Sox third baseman, who had his first major league hit last night in Detroit against the Tigers here on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score with Bruce Levine. I'm David Haw. Jake, so it's 2011. You're a kid growing up in St. Louis. You're at the World Series Game 6. Tony La Russa is the manager of that Cardinals team, Tony La Russa, the Hall of Famer, and now he's the guy putting your name in the lineup card. When you walked into the clubhouse last night, when you were in the dugout, did you have a pinch me, is this real moment when you looked over and you saw Tony La Russa as your manager?
Yeah, I mean, that was special. It was really cool to have that experience with him, and I still haven't talked to him about Game 6, but I'm going to at some point. But, you know, at this point, we're focused on winning games for the White Sox, so, it makes it simple just doing that.
Jake, there's a lot of White Sox pride going on at the Major League level, and I imagine at your level, where you just came from as well, with so many players – being drafted, signed, drafted, and now playing at the major league level, coming through the system. Is it noticeable when you have conversations with guys that were with you in the minor leagues that, hey, we're not only having a chance to play in the major leagues, but something really special may be happening here in this clubhouse, in this organization?
Yeah, no, it's really cool. Just having that experience with the guys that you come up with and the younger guys in the clubhouse, and just, you know, being a part of a pennant race. It's always exciting. But hey, guys, I gotta cut it short.
Sure.
Super Joe's telling me to go outside, take some ground balls. So sorry about that.
All right. Well,
best of luck
for joining us.
Yeah, Jake. Yeah, thanks for joining us.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know who. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.